I'm Daphne Wollstonecraft, and you're listening to Night Watch, a show of terrifyingly true stories. If you'd like your story told on the show, email it to watcher at nightwatchpod.com. During summers in New England, I sometimes take jobs on fishing boats for extra money, usually with my cousin, who had mostly gotten me into it after high school when I opted out of going to college. It can be a very tough job, but the guys I work with are fun, and they make overcast sunburns and smelling like fish for days on end kind of bearable. It's sort of funny that I even work this job because sharks are one of my biggest fears. But a lot of my job is just hanging out harborside, unloading catches and stuff, or cleaning the deck. But when I do work out on the boats, I know I'm safe amongst the crew and that I won't fall in and the boat won't capsize. Those type of situations aren't super likely to happen out there on the water, so I just try not to think about it. I keep my head down most days, measuring fish and storing catch, that sort of thing. One morning we were out there, and I just remember it being a rocky, windy morning, which was freaking me out for sure. In my early days working, I didn't love being on the boat as it was, especially early mornings when the sun wasn't even out yet. I looked out on the water, and all I could see was black waves against a lighter skyline, right before sunrise. After setting the nets, we waited for the catch, and the cold was helping keep me awake as I hugged my body, shivering, trying not to get sick. I was sipping coffee and just trying to breathe in and out, but feeling a bit queasy, I walked to the edge and held on to the railing on the starboard side towards the stern, or the rear of the boat, taking deep breaths again in and out, as the dark water sloshed up against the sides of the boat. I stood there, looking out at the horizon, because that's the best thing to do when you're on a boat and feeling nauseous, when I heard a faint clunking sound to my right. It was even more towards the stern, this sound, as if something was hitting the side of the boat. My mind immediately went to the idea of a shark breaching the water, ready to make me its breakfast. As a reflex, I stumbled backwards and reached for my pocket light, shining it on the dark water to see what was causing the noise. When I shone the light just over the railing and to my right where I had heard this noise, it looked like a person floating on its front. I stumbled backwards again, refocusing on the object on the sea's surface. My mind was moving so fast to come up with answers, thinking about how all the fishermen wore bright orange bibs, and the person in the water wasn't wearing one, and that the person had long hair, and all the guys I knew on board had crew cuts. Face down, below me, bobbing closer and closer to our anchored boat, was what had to be a human body. Only the lower half of their body was missing. I didn't realize that just yet, but I shouted for my cousin Grady to come have a look before the body could be sucked down and caught in our net. But I also didn't want it to disappear in case what I was seeing was a real human body. Grady came over and yelled for the other guys because I was right. It was the upper half of a woman's body. She was wearing a top, no jacket, no life vest, so we started to wonder how long she had been in the water and how she'd wound up there in the first place. But there was one detail that will be hard for me to forget as long as I live. We had to flip over her body because Before we noticed her lack of legs, we had to see if she was alive. And the process of doing so with a pole was so grueling and disturbing, just beyond belief. But we didn't want to touch her body because we were almost certain she was dead, just based on the way her arms looked, since we couldn't see her face yet. When we finally got her flipped over, her eyes were open and lacked all signs of life, with this hazy gray fog across her irises. The scariest part was having to see all of those details with the bright light of a flashlight. But we also noticed that her neck looked like it had been sliced all the way across, like a person had cut it with a knife. Her skin was barely a shade of blue and wasn't bloated much, meaning she likely hadn't been in the water very long, making all of us guys think that her torso hadn't been detached from the rest of her due to being in the water, but that she was thrown into the sea that way. We called the police straight away. I think some of the guys were calling them as we tried flipping her body. They told us not to touch her body, worrying that it could be damaged or that evidence could be lost. So we just had to use that same pulled net to keep her body near our boat through very rocky waves. And once we knew she was dead, it was almost mentally impossible to do this. Every minute that went by before police arrived felt like so much longer. Some of us got sick, some of us had to go below deck. It was a lot to see and handle. A large team of officers came out and took her away to figure out the answers to all of our questions. I saw it come up in the news after that, but since she hadn't been identified by the time the news caught wind, her name and situation wasn't listed. The report just said that a woman had been found by fishermen. That was us. The report didn't mention any kind of theories or manner of death. It simply said that a woman was found and they were investigating it. I am still traumatized to this day from what I saw, especially not knowing who she is or if someone out there is missing her. Me and the guys talk about it sometimes because it's by far the most disturbing thing any of us have come across on the water. But none of us ever got word or saw anything after that. One of my buddies told me that it could take years to identify her, so maybe they haven't figured it out yet. But my friend, whose brother is an officer, said that it could be linked to a missing persons case from a few towns over. For this next one, I searched far and wide to find one that was good enough for all the lovely people at the Blissful Body True Crime Yoga class and anybody else that's working out right now. This is gonna be a spooky one. A couple months ago, I started a new job at a gym. This gym is fairly large and nice in an older building that has been pretty well renovated over the years. I used to work at a boxing gym before this, but when it closed down, I was in search of a new and somewhat similar job. The perks of working for a somewhat nicer gym, I say somewhat because it's not a luxury gym by any means, but it's not a shitty wannabe nice chain either, is that I get a free membership with the job position, so it's a good opportunity to utilize all the classes, cycling, dance, yoga, etc., as well as using the standard equipment for free. So I interviewed for the job, got it, and started out training during the morning shift to get a grasp of the space and the duties that I'd be in charge of. I work at the front desk, so most of my duties involve checking guests in with their passes, setting up new members, giving tours of the gym, and if I'm working the early morning shift or the late night shift, opening or closing the gym. It's open from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m., so I hoped I generally landed the mid shift, which I do about half the time. The other times, I worked in the mornings without incident. My routine became working out right after my shift ended and then heading home to enjoy the rest of my day and evenings after about 3 p.m. But as is normal in training, I eventually trained to do the night shift, so I knew how to properly close up the gym when I needed to. For this, I trained two nights with my coworker Mike, and it seemed easy enough. Basically, the morning duties in reverse. Simple enough. I was working at the gym for around 6 weeks before I realized anything was off about the space. Something that rational logic can't explain. Because it took around that long for me to work a night shift by myself. It was a Wednesday night at 10, and the crowd had significantly lulled hours earlier. In the small city I reside in, most people were out of the gym by 8, which meant that this shift was slow and super easy. I pretty much got to do whatever I wanted on my phone or work on personal projects at my desk. For example, I want to draw more, so that night I realized that working night shifts meant I could sit at my desk and take pencil to paper all night and pretty much zone out. Working nights wouldn't be so bad, it seemed, until I closed up. This local man who comes into the gym twice a day was the last person in there that night. He knows the gym hours well and enjoys coming in at night when he practically has the gym to himself and can use equipment without waiting, as he's told me. But knowing we close at 10, he left about 20 minutes before that night. While he was finishing his workout and getting ready to leave, I started wiping down and sanitizing machines and vacuuming the carpet. Then I headed to the two classrooms to clean those and make sure everybody was gone, and ensure any left items would be stored away in the lost and found closet. I checked the cycling room first, grabbed a hoodie someone left behind, cleaned up for a few, and then headed to the room that hosts dance classes like Zumba and Cardio Bop, as well as yoga. The lights were off, but it's a large room with a wall hosting a floor-to-ceiling mirror across the entire length of it. Across the room, it looked like there was someone sitting down. I saw it in the mirror so fast, just this dark silhouette on the floor. So I gasped and switched the light on as fast as I could. I screeched when I saw a woman sitting with her legs crossed, stretching her arms. And when I screeched, so did she. I started laughing from embarrassment and profusely apologizing, telling her that I didn't know anybody was in there, and kindly explained that the classrooms are off limits outside of normal class schedule hours. She said that she was just stretching after her normal workout, and I immediately recognized her to have been using one of the cardio machines about 2 hours earlier. "No problem," I said, and she finished up while I sprayed and wiped the mirrors. When I saw her out, it was 9:58, so it was time to do the sweep to make sure no one else was in the building before locking the doors. The gym isn't massive, but it's not a small space, so I had to check the locker rooms, the showers, the bathrooms, and the rest of the floor. When I did, all was empty, and I was sure of it. I made my way to the front door at 10, locked it, and started shutting everything else down, machines, computers, and finishing up cleaning. I turned off the lights in the men's locker room. And after I did, I began walking into the hallway towards the women's, when I heard a very loud, "Hey!" right behind me, clear as day. There was no doubt in my mind that someone said that. Someone just yelled, "Hey!" relatively close behind me. It startled me so bad that I turned around and said, "Hello?" to find the dark men's locker room. I flipped on the light, fully expecting to see a gym goer messing with me, kind of like how that woman had, unintentionally though, in the yoga and dance room earlier. But when I turned the light on, I saw and heard no one. I started jogging down the aisles of lockers, worried what I'd see as I entered each new row. but every row I passed was empty. Then I saw a flash in the corner of my eye, followed by the sound of the men's showers turning on. I jogged over to the showers, but they too were empty. I was so freaked out because I was positive someone was in there with me. But as I ran around the entire gym looking, I didn't see a soul. When I came back out to the gym floor where all the cardio machines and weights are, I heard a loud buzzing, almost zipping sound. As I walked closer to it, I noticed one of the treadmills was turned up to the highest possible setting, with the track looping as fast as possible. But when I had just swept that room a minute earlier, this machine wasn't on. I ended up calling my closest coworker, and he came down a few minutes later to find me standing in the corner of the room, frozen. He was a pretty usual closer, so after I told him what I'd seen, he said, "Yeah, this place is haunted. That kind of stuff has happened to me here before, too." I couldn't believe how casual he was being about it all, but he said he didn't think it was an evil spirit. We swept the building regardless and didn't find a thing. I actually ended up telling management about this whole ordeal, and he just kind of laughed it off, saying it was an old building and warned me to make sure everyone was out of the gym before I locked up, as if that would explain it away. I'm not sure how much longer I'll end up working here if I notice anything similar during my night shifts. But I have one coming up this weekend that I am not looking forward to. This next one is about a really creepy secret admirer. When I was 15 years old, I had a BlackBerry cell phone and absolutely loved texting all my friends on it. Before it, I had a Sidekick, which was no doubt more fun, but the BlackBerry was a sophisticated upgrade, and as a 15 going on 16-year-old, I loved any chance to appear older. So when I started getting these flirtatious texts, I originally wasn't weirded out by it. One day, I got a text from a number I didn't know. It had the same area code as I did, so I assumed it was someone from school who didn't have the guts to talk to me in person and wanted to admire me from afar. I'm not trying to sound cocky about it either, because I was actually quite insecure in those days, which I think made getting this attention all the more desirable. I assumed it was a male texting me because of his near-aggressively passionate text about how much he liked the way I looked. For reasons that will be clear later, I eventually went back to take a log of each text, so I have the exact verbiage used to this day. I really don't like to look back at these messages, but for the sake of the story, I've collected the ones more relevant in context. I'm also going to disguise my name, so let's say it's Pamela. It started off innocently enough, with a first message of, "Hey, Pamela, smiley face. I like that dress you were wearing today. You looked really pretty." I had, in fact, worn a summer dress that early September day, so again, assumed it must have been some guy from school. I waited a few minutes to reply before firing off, "Thanks, winky face. Who's this?" I was hoping for a good text right back, hoping it would be a guy from school that I actually thought was cute. But it took hours for me to receive a response. They eventually said, quote, "Your secret admirer, winky face. I'm too shy to tell you who I am, but I think you're beautiful." I didn't end up replying to this message because I probably didn't know what to say back. I know I was happy in the moment to get the compliments, but without knowing who the person was and without a hook to reply to, I just left it at that. I kept going about my business, and 2 days went by before I heard from them again. As I was walking home, I got a text that said, I love when you wear your hair like that. It's sexy. I remember kind of looking around, thinking the person had to be looking at me in the moment in my neighborhood, but since I'd been wearing my hair in that high ponytail all day, I thought again that maybe it was someone from school. I sent off a thanks smiley face and carried on once again. Every few days for weeks, I would get messages just like these, always complimenting my appearance. They seemed harmless enough, and at my current age now, it's hard for me to believe I didn't press for this person's identity, but I didn't. I was so young then, I likely didn't realize that these unsolicited messages that appeared nice probably weren't, and that if the person really was a schoolmate, coming forward would have been the right thing to do instead of weirdly hiding behind a phone, as if that would ever impress me or any other girl. But my low teenage self-esteem sadly didn't see it that way. I was just happy to get some attention. But after a few months of this happening, the messages slowly started to get more predatory and somewhat threatening. To name a few, "You have no idea the things I want to do to you." "I wish I could just get you alone." "When can we finally meet?" That last one threw me a bit for a loop because it was as if we had never met or never spent time with each other. So I asked them, "Don't we talk at school?" Hoping that this would make them think that their cover was blown and they would give more details about themselves. And although it didn't work the way I'd hoped, it did work slightly because they replied with, "Nope, smiley face, I don't go to your school." That's all they said, really, no follow-up. What person in their right mind would think that wouldn't scare me off? It did, so I didn't respond to it. I didn't tell my friends or my mom because I was worried that they would think I was stupid for messaging this stranger back in the first place. And I was kind of embarrassed to show them the messages since they were flirtatious in nature. But again, looking back, I wish I had just been honest and gotten some advice, because the messages continued to come in, usually when I was walking to or from school. And then one night, I got a message that said, "Hi, smiley face. That looks yummy. Do you cook often? I'd love it if you cooked for me." It was nighttime and I was in the kitchen eating something for dinner by myself at the counter, flipping through a magazine. All our windows curtains were open, so I immediately freaked out thinking someone was outside watching me. My brother came into the room moments later and I asked him if he was messing with me. He had no idea what I was talking about. And he was on the phone with a friend when he came in, so I knew he hadn't just been texting me. When my brother left the room, I shouted, "Leave me alone, freak!" aimed at the texter as if they could hear me. Well, it appears they did, because then I got a text that said, "Aw, now that's not very nice. Yell like that again and I just might have to punish you." When I tell you I ran around the room, shutting all the curtains rapidly, I was fast and scared. And the next day came the apology text. "I'm sorry if I scared you. I just like you so much. I wish you'd like me back." Later that day, I received, "Why won't you talk to me? Text me back. I love you." That's when I finally told a friend about the whole ordeal. And she told me to go to the police, but I didn't. I only got texts for a few more days, and then they just stopped. It wasn't until much later that I put the pieces together, but I am almost positive that it was my across-the-street adult neighbor. So here's what I learned in the coming years. That winter, when the text slowed and then stopped, my across-the-street neighbor, the father of a girl from my school who was probably in his 40s, was arrested for the sexual assault of a minor, as well as aggravated stalking. I didn't know this at the time because I didn't know the dad well, but I did know the daughter. We didn't hang out a lot, but we had classes together and had each other's phone numbers. So I didn't know that he was arrested. I'm sure my parents wouldn't have told me anyway as not to scare me, but I'm guessing they knew. And it took a while to become fodder at school. But when I found out from a friend that he had been arrested, she asked me if I ever noticed him being creepy because he was my neighbor after all. I didn't because I never really saw him, but I am positive he saw me. Considering he was a predator and lived right across the street from me, I imagine he had gotten my number from his daughter, the girl I went to school with, and likely secretly, and then started stalking me on my phone with a burner phone or something. Because the text stopped right around the time he was arrested, and he was clearly sickly into minors. I still wonder if he used a burner phone because the police never contacted me or tried to get a statement from me, which I assume they would have so it could help their case. Which makes me think that they never found evidence of our messages or anything like that. Because I had no way of knowing if it was him for sure, and again, I was embarrassed and freaked out. I just wanted to stay out of it and stay away from him, if he really was the one behind it. But I truly believed that it was him all along. Our final story for today is about a hike gone wrong. After my husband passed, I tried to get my daughter involved as much as possible with me. I worked a lot and felt perpetually guilty for leaving her behind constantly, but for my own sanity and mental health, wanted to keep up my hobby of hiking as much as I could when I wasn't working. That proved harder than I imagined after my husband passed because all my free time, I'd be with my daughter. Not that that's supposed to sound like a complaint because I could be sitting at the DMV with her and it would be amazing. She was and is the absolute light of my life. But to get her involved in what I like to do while letting her explore what could become her own future hobbies, I wanted to integrate her into certain things. Hiking was one of them because A, being outside is the best, and I wanted to see if she too would fall in love with the outdoors. And B, I would spend several hours on end hiking, and this was a way that I didn't have to get a sitter or be gone from her for even more time. When she was with me, I usually lessened my hikes to a couple hours so she wouldn't get tired or grouchy or hot or anything like that. I didn't want to be selfish in these ventures. We took a sunset walk on this day because it was rather hot outside, so going towards the end of the day instead of waking her up for sunrise seemed like a better choice for us. Unfortunately for this particular spot I had chosen, not many others were out. Whether that was because it was so hot out earlier that day, or because this was a less popular trail, I wasn't sure. I'd only hiked it a couple times before in the years prior. When the sun was about to set, I decided to turn us around and head back to the car so we'd make it there before it was completely dark outside. By that time, I had long been carrying my daughter on my back as she snacked on some fruit and took in the views. We were having a great time together, bonding and being out there, just laughing and pointing at the small wildlife and the shapes in the mountain ridges. As our hike came to an end, she fell asleep fastened to me, proof of a successful day. But as we came down the hill, I looked down at my car and saw a shadowy person standing behind it. And this person was fully still. Until I started to come down the hill. Suddenly, they're moving from one tire to the next, looking into my car windows, getting down underneath my car, the works. I couldn't tell what they were doing or why, especially with the sun being nearly set by this time. I could only make out their shape. With my daughter on my back, I felt more vulnerable than ever. I wanted to pull my cell phone out, but it was stuffed in my backpack under where my sleeping daughter was. I didn't know if I should wake her up, risk her crying or getting upset and alerting this man or person, but I wasn't sure what other moves to make. I also didn't want this guy to keep messing with my car, unaware of what he had already done to it. So I puffed up my chest and decided I needed to make a move now. From my higher position on the hill, I shouted down at him, "Get away from my car! The police are on their way!" They weren't just yet, but I'd make sure they were if he tried anything else and didn't run off right after I made the threat. And he didn't move. He stayed put. I realized that as a woman with a young girl on my back, I wasn't much of a threat, but when he heard me, he was at the rear of my car and stood there like a statue, a dark, shadowed statue. My daughter started to rustle awake, but I needed this guy gone. So I said again, "Get away now or you'll be sorry." But his figure stayed the same. I looked around rapidly, hoping there weren't more people around or I'd be doomed. Because like I said before, this was a more remote trail and there wasn't another hiker or vehicle in sight. So what did this guy want? Did he have friends? Where was his vehicle? I couldn't wrap my head around what was happening or why. I didn't want to get closer to the man with my daughter, but as a warning, I started slowly walking down the hill as another threat came out of my mouth. "Get gone! Go! Now!" As soon as I said it, I realized that it sounded like I was talking to an animal. But it just came out. I didn't know what else to say. Then, the person started walking closer to me, coming out from behind my car and walking towards me, holding something. So I took my daughter and backpack off, set my daughter down on a rock and told her not to move, and fumbled for my cell phone as the guy ascended the hill. I finally found it, dialed 911, and as he saw me doing so, he slowly backed up and went off into some bushes down past my car. This was little comfort since now I didn't know where the guy was. There I was in a rural canyon with the sky almost pitch black, with my 5-year-old daughter and some ill-intentioned creeper off in the brush. My service was spotty, but I was able to make that emergency phone call where I barely got through to the dispatcher where I was. She instructed me to stay on the phone with her, so I did. I wanted to stay on the hill where I had a clear view of the area down below in case the guy came out again. Well, as clear of a view as I could have with all the darkness, but I felt again vulnerable. I kept looking behind me and all around me, expecting to see another shadowy figure coming up behind me at any time. While I had been scanning the surroundings above us, not saying a word to the operator as we awaited police arrival, with my daughter calmly asking me questions, I looked back down towards my car and saw another figure. I told the dispatcher straight away, and then told the guy that police were almost there and that he'd be sorry if he stuck around. But part of me wanted him to so that he would get caught for ruining our night and doing God knows what to our car. Moments later, those flashing red and blue lights came around the canyon corner and the man went off running, causing multiple officers to chase him on foot. When I safely returned to my car, I saw that all the tires were slashed, the gas tank had been stabbed, and one of my windows was busted. The hunt for this guy, who police only got a passing glimpse of, went on for over an hour, with even a helicopter pulling up to try and find him. But somehow, he disappeared into the Colorado Bluffs unscathed. In today's episode, you heard The Body Under the Sea by Harrison, Closing Time by Reddit user Sunny As She Goes, Creepiest of Secret Admirers by Anonymous, and Figure in the Colorado Bluffs by Stacy. Each story on Nightwatch is told with the permission of the experiencer. If you have a story for the show, send it to watcher@nightwatchpod.com. Nightwatch is a Dark West Productions podcast hosted and produced by me, Daphne Wolsoncroft. Also produced by Heath Merriman. Original score by Daniel Amon. Follow us on social media at Nightwatch Stories. And tune in every Thursday for a new episode.